Welcome to the Console DevTools Podcast, a show all about interesting developer tools. I'm David Mitten, co-founder of Console.
And I'm Jean Young, CEO of Akita Software, an API observability startup. In each episode, we'll discuss two interesting developer tools. We're keeping this to 15 minutes, so let's get started.
Our first tool this week is Fission, which is a decentralized app backend for storage and identity. Essentially, this gives developers APIs to build authentication and storage by using peer-to-peer decentralized technologies like the Interplanetary File System without having to worry about the underlying protocol. Now, if you remember back to one of our previous episodes when we were talking about offline first and owning your own data, this is really part of that same kind of philosophy. And for me, if we go back to the original days of the internet, it really was a distributed collection of networks with nobody in control. If you wanted to host something, you could run a web server behind an IP address, buy a domain name, and then point that to it. And the challenge only really came if you wanted to operate at scale. And then you would have to buy a lot of physical metal servers, find space to rack them, and that would just take a lot of time and money. It's definitely better now that you get to access those compute resources in a few seconds from the cloud, and that helps a lot of innovation and experimentation. But the problem comes when a significant portion of the internet is run by just a few companies. And I think the big three cloud providers make up a large number of services that we use today. More than 50% of emails go through Gmail, all videos on YouTube, and through the dollar, the US controls most financial transactions. And it just so happens that we're from the same kind of liberal society that those companies base their principles on. But who knows how that's going to change over the next decade. And I suppose the point is that centralized control is fine so long as you agree with the philosophy of those in control. So whether it's through Fission's APIs or something else, maybe using IPFS directly or WebAssembly-based compute that's kind of deployed through web browsers, don't you think it's a good idea to build on top of open web tech that no company is in control of? What do you think, Jean?
I think this is a really interesting philosophical question because my first response when I came upon Fission was, oh, well, this seems cool, but who would trust some random company they never heard of to handle storage and auth? Those seem like the two most important things. And so I had sort of an opposite response initially that you do want the big companies with something to lose who you trust with decades of proven track record to handle this kind of thing. And I know this is antithetical to a lot of the culture of computing, but it's one of those things where it's like one of those questions, would you rather trust the government to regulate certain kinds of things, or would you trust people to self-regulate? I guess I'm betraying some of my politics here, but I would rather trust the people with something to lose. I think that without some sort of governance, for lack of a better word, and without a reputation or something on the line, I would not necessarily feel that my data is safe and that there's enough oversight.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think if you're going to send your data unencrypted to someone, then you want to be able to trust them. And I suppose you could say, well, back in the 90s, would you trust this little startup called Amazon or Google? And they've proven their trust over the years through the services that they've run. And this is a new startup that's now appearing. But if the underlying technology, IPFS, means that the data is distributed and encrypted, so you don't need to trust them, that's one of those challenges completely removed.
There's, do we trust them with the data? And then there's, do we trust them to have implemented the very tricky algorithms correctly? And I don't know. I think some people will say, well, if the code is open source and everyone can read the code and everyone can test the code, then we should trust it. But look, code is getting more and more complex. It's running on top of more and more stuff. It's really hard to just look at code and understand what it does. Back in the day, 10, 20 years ago, you could read code and learn to trust it. But I think that open source is really entering a new era when the source code itself doesn't actually tell you that much anymore because of everything else that's going on. It's not just do we trust the encryption algorithms, how do they implement the encryption algorithms? Which encryption algorithms do they implement? How's everything interacting together? What's this running on top of? What's the infrastructure they're running on top of? Do they configure that correctly? There's so many other questions now.
Yeah, absolutely. Just being able to read the source code, I think, is one of the biggest misnomers of modern open source, because just because you can doesn't mean you will, or you'll be able to understand what is there in the first place. And most people are just not going to read through the source code of the Linux kernel or the web server they're using or the authentication system they're using.
And I think even if we crowdsource, you know, we assume everyone is an expert. They know the language. They know all of the components of what's used. These are not practical assumptions. I wouldn't even believe that one person could reason about the complexity of all that in their heads. And so I don't know. Trust has to be established, like you said, through doing other kinds of things well first. And I think if your first act is store all of your data with me and store all of your auth with me, how do I trust you?
Data storage is certainly one thing. I think auth potentially has another challenge, just because if it's being hosted by a small startup and they go out of business, as most startups do, you've got all of your authentication tokens operated by some entity that no longer exists, which is potentially a big problem if you're running an app.
There's a big gray region where you're in the middle. You get acquired by one of these bigger players. Now they own all of your auth. And so I think if that was the fit you're trying to avoid, there you are again.
So Fission's response to this would be they're working on open standards. They're making these standardized through the web standards bodies. They're going to open source it so you can run everything yourself. How far do you think that goes in mitigating this?
I think that does go quite far in mitigating the concern that you're going to have to run it yourself. I do think that auth and things having to do with security and those standards are things that need to get updated. And it's critical that they do get updated. Because look, if you're building a command line tool that's doing file processing and you don't update it, there's maybe a file vulnerability once every few decades or something like that. But auth is something that's constantly evolving. It's something that there's no guarantees that once things evolve, your auth is still going to be up to date. So I think it makes it better. But I think auth is definitely not in the same boat as command line tool that's really stable.
And we've seen some quite successful large companies abstract away authentication, like Auth0. And then the cloud providers have tried to create their own equivalent services and not really quite reached it. They've not quite reached the level that Auth0 has managed to. And it comes down to which part of your tech stack do you consider to be critical to the business that you have to build and run and operate and own yourself, and which can you send out to a third-party service, really?
Yeah, absolutely. For auth especially, it's really about who do you want to take on your liability. And even for the size of company I'm running, I've told my team, look, let's just keep using Okta, because if we have an authentication issue, I'd much prefer that it's Okta's fault than our fault.
And then I think the final point about this is, who cares about this? The Web3 movement, and that really just means blockchain at the moment and popularized through Bitcoin, but I can see it becoming a lot more important over the next couple of years. Is this something that is a niche issue that a small number of very highly advocate developers are gunning for, and users don't really care because they'd rather just have the docs load in the web browser and everything work fine on Google Drive? Or do you think this is something that developers should actually start caring more about?
I will go out on a limb and say I think it's niche, and I would love to be proven wrong, because that shows that I'm behind the times and, you know, times are progressing. I'd love to hear from our listeners what they think.
Yeah, let us know. What do you think about decentralized technologies as the back end to your own apps, as opposed to more consumer facing apps like cryptocurrencies? Our second tool is Ask Git, which allows you to query Git repositories with SQL. Well, following on from our previous episode where we looked at code search, this allows you to look at the underlying architecture and metadata that exists in your GitHub repositories. Now, I think we tend to consider Git as a container for the source code, and it's the source code that's most interesting. But Git has really become a database of all the history and the context about the project. And from a philosophical perspective, it's quite interesting when you have enough history to be able to go back and see how things have evolved. And if we think about the real world, there isn't really anything that exists in the same way where you have basically a perfect record of the entire existence of a project. So being able to query things like who's committed the most code, what's changed, which files get attention, and how the technologies are changing over time, I think has some potential for some really interesting insights. What was your take, Jean?
I think this is incredible. I love the idea of having data-driven observations about how programmers develop. So one of my really good friends is this guy named Seth Stevens Davidowitz, and he wrote a book called Everybody Lies. I'll shamelessly plug it here, but he also writes New York Times opinion pieces where he analyzes Google Trends data. He's analyzed Spotify data, but he's made some really interesting observations about the way people think and the way people live based on how they engage with Google search and other kinds of websites and web apps. And I think that there are so many things I read about developers that aren't backed up by any data. You know, most of the discussions about how do developers develop are really philosophical. They're based on each developer having their feeling about what their life is without even really quantifying their own development practices. From when I was a professor at Carnegie Mellon, I also had some colleagues do this kind of research on Git itself. So there's one guy, if people are interested, named Bogdan Vasilescu. He was doing this Git research, seemed like mostly by hand, because I wanted this data sometimes too to motivate the programming languages, programming tools research I was doing. And I was asking around, you know, how are people scraping this data? And at the time, a few years ago, everyone was doing it by hand. They had built their own framework. So I think it's awesome that people can now ask these questions in a much easier way, in a lower friction way. I hope that anyone talking about programmers, anyone working on developer experience, developer tools, really makes great use of this resource. And developers themselves for their own teams to improve productivity, improve happiness, start using these kinds of data-driven measures.
Absolutely. I think because Git has quite a reputation for being very difficult to figure out all the different commands that are available, it's exposing it through an interface that probably every developer knows, which is SQL, makes it really easy to access that information. And Ask It has just recently extended their integration to allow you to search GitHub's API through SQL as well. So you can start pulling out issues, understanding who's starred the repository and link that into all the Git commit data as well, which I think is particularly interesting given how much critical infrastructure and everything that we do as a society is based around software now.
Yeah. There are so many questions that I've done by hand in the past, like show me bug reports where this happened, or show me security vulnerabilities and how quickly did they get patched? What was the nature of the bugs? A lot of the bug finding world, I think, could be really improved by better targeting this. I think knowing, understanding what gets fixed and how quickly will really help with prioritization. And I think a lot of these studies have been done very painfully by hand. And so they're very few and far between right now.
I hope it also encourages people to have better Git commit hygiene as well, in terms of putting useful information into the commit messages. Because explaining why you've made a change is often more useful than just looking at the diff, particularly when you're 6 months down the line and trying to explain it to new people on the team.
Yeah, absolutely. And something I'm really excited about is the day when there are automatic analyses that get included in the search as well. What kinds of code changes were there? How big was the code change? Did it impact other parts of the system? I think this will be a really interesting day when we can start searching over that data.
All right, that's it for this week. Let us know what kind of things you would like to be able to search for with a SQL query into your GitHub repositories and what you think about decentralized tech for your app backend. Thanks, everyone. See you next week.
Goodbye.